word for it. Paul Harvey. Good day.
Now, broadcasting from the main drag of your Twin Cities, it's Mishki.
Good afternoon. My name's T.D. Mishki. Welcome to the broadcast. I read this morning in the St. Paul Pioneer Press about the memorial service last night. Faith leaders urge unity, compassion, and patience as more than 1,000 people gather to memorialize the victims of the I-35W bridge collapse and begin the healing. Some were grievers, some were survivors. Most of the more than 1,000 people at Sunday night's service of healing were everyday people, trying to make sense of the collapse of the Interstate 35W bridge. Husband and wife Kevin and Mary Kopelke of Shoreview came to the service to pay their respects. Kevin said he was on the bridge when it collapsed Wednesday night. He fell 65 feet in his car, landed in the Mississippi River. All I remember seeing is a cloud. All I remember hearing is a noise, like an accident, and my car filling with water, he said. Someone was yelling, asking whether I needed help. That person who was yelling at Kevin was a gentleman I had a chance to talk to yesterday. I was over at Gold Medal Park doing what everybody else over there was doing, taking a look at what was left of the bridge and getting a different feeling than you get from television. I had a chance to speak with someone who was in the middle of the bridge when it went down and was right next to Kevin, someone who helped pull Kevin out. 22-year-old Eric Helgeson, 23, sorry, thanks, Speed. 23-year-old Eric Helgeson. He's a soft-spoken, thoughtful guy who has spent the last few days trying to get some perspective on this and bring himself a little peace in the process, something that's difficult to do. And you'll learn about what he's been going through and what he went through when you listen to my interview with him. This, again, was from yesterday at the Overlook there at Gold Medal Park in Minneapolis. 23-year-old Eric Helgeson.
It was a better view over there.
And that's where the other part goes down. You can't see the part that goes up. It's on the north end that the... Have you seen the pictures of... Bridge buckles up. My car was in the middle. Well, I was probably about halfway across the bridge when it went down.
You were about at the halfway point?
About halfway, three-quarter point.
How often do you take the bridge? How often had you taken it?
Every day. Baseball. The team I coach is, help coach is, our home games are at Irondale High School.
Okay.
And then I was headed to North St. Paul. So, my first instinct when I knew it was going down, you know, was to slam on the gas and try to get off. Initial reaction, that was just for a split second before I slammed on the brakes and braced for impact and just held on and rode it down.
Was there a sensation of being airborne?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. That drop, and then you literally remember bracing for impact.
Yep. I held onto the steering wheel and straightened my arms and put my head back and just thought that was it. Thought I was dead.
What's that feeling like?
It's unexplainable. It's
you don't have, obviously, much, I didn't have much time to think about it, but it was just, you know, it's like a blank, for me anyway, it was a blank feeling. I just, very surreal. It wasn't, my life didn't flash before my eyes. I just, you know, utter fear, you know, that was it, that I wasn't going to make it, and that it was unbelievable that it was happening to me.
When you hit, then, what was that like?
As soon as I hit, all my windows broke on my car. My airbag went, and the atmosphere was immediately after. You could hear the splash from the bridge, and your first instinct is to get out of the car, you know, because I didn't know if I was completely in the water or if I was sinking or if I was going to go down or if the bridge was going to go down. So you just, yeah, at that point there's no thought to anything you do. You just act. It's pure adrenaline rushing through you, and you just, you know, you're in survival mode.
Did you feel pain?
I didn't feel any sort of pain whatsoever.
And you grabbed your door handle and the door opened fine?
I can't recall if I climbed out of my window or if I opened my door. That part is the one part I just don't remember, because I was out of there so quickly. As soon as I hit, I looked to my left and there was a man in his car right next to me. His car was in the exact same position as me, half in the water, half out. And I remember yelling to him, as soon as we landed, you gotta get out, you gotta get out, you gotta get out. And from that point, I got out of my car before he did. Kevin was his name. And he looked like he was kind of struggling to get out of his car. I had an SUV. He was in a lower riding car, so the water was, looked like, up to where the window started on his car, so it was probably up to his chest sitting down. So from that point, I got out of my car, jumped on his trunk, and it was slanted down, and grabbed his arm. He was halfway out of his window. I grabbed his arm and helped him out. He was stuck a little at first, but then he got loose, helped pull him out, and then we both proceeded to get on the sturdy part of the bridge.
So the part you're in is partially submerged.
Mm-hmm. My engine was completely submerged. We ran on to the middle part of the bridge, so we were still stranded on the bridge, just wanted to get away from the cars and the water. Because at that point, you know, I didn't know if the cars were going to go in or if the bridge was going to sink or, you know.
When you got onto the middle part of the bridge, then what?
You know, I keep hearing people say they heard absolute silence. For me, it was, the first thing I heard was a blood-curdling scream from underneath the bridge. There was a man under there that was screaming, help me, my girlfriend's dying, help me, oh my God. And that was very, very, it's just a helpless feeling. I looked over the middle portion of the bridge, and all I could see was rushing water. I couldn't see him. I could hear the echo from, you know, his voice was echoing in the bridge, but luckily he and his girlfriend actually made it out. Their car went to the bottom, and they were able to escape from the car and get to the surface. From there, he had gotten on the bridge, and his hand was gashed. He was bleeding pretty bad. You know, everyone was in shock, so I don't necessarily know that he was aware of it. So when I saw that, I took off my shirt and wrapped his hand up. And
this was the man who was originally screaming?
Yeah.
He was under the bridge,
mm-hmm.
between the bottom of the bridge and the water?
I believe so.
Why did he believe his girlfriend was dying?
I'm assuming, I don't want to assume too much, but I'm assuming she hadn't, you know, come up from the bottom yet.
And how about her?
she was relatively unscathed, but she had some back pain, so she laid down.
That's the first thing when you get on the safe part of the bridge that you remember is this guy yelling. Once he's on the bridge and you know he's okay and you have his hand wrapped, what's next?
From that point, it's just an awe-inspiring scene. The car that was in front of me was completely submerged, and she didn't make it. She got pulled out of her car, and I don't know if it was the impact or the water, but you look around and you try to. Everyone was in kind of a state of shock, and everyone was trying to help each other and help themselves. Everyone that knew they weren't in critical condition was concerned about the person next to them. There was a nurse. I think she was a nurse. She was wearing her uniform. I'm assuming she was on the bridge when it went down. She was absolutely incredible. She was running to everyone, making sure everyone was okay. There was a construction worker who I think had a broken back, and he couldn't move, but she was tending to him, and she was running all over the place. And then you look up at the, you see the school bus kind of slanted down, and it's just, you know, when I saw the school bus, my heart just dropped. And
was there an ability at all at that point to say, what just happened? How did this happen? Did you have any thought about that, or did you just accept it?
What just happened is something that, a question that was kind of going through my mind the entire time. But it's not something that you sit there and really dwell on. It's something that kind of, in the back of your head, like, this is unbelievable. It's happening to me. It's almost like you're in a movie. It's almost like, you know, why? I can't believe I'm here right now. I can't believe I'm standing. I can't believe I'm breathing. I can't believe, you know, that just happened. I can't believe I just fell on a bridge into the river.
Is there any sense of exhilaration that you're alive?
Initially, it's almost for a split second that I was grateful, but at the same minute, everything was moving so fast, and you know, it's.
Do you have any thought of, can you get off the bridge, or can't you even get off it at that point?
At that point, you know, there was a feeling that. We need to get off the bridge because you don't know if it's going to go under or if it's going to shift again, or, you know, you just don't know. And looking around for ways to get off, there just wasn't a safe enough way to do anything. It would have required, you know, swimming, and the current was pretty strong, and the small parts on my side of the bridge that you could have gotten off on were mangled, and you know, you don't know if it's safe or not, and the concrete slabs are all at different angles, and it's just it's, you know, it was just something that, if you were to take a calculated risk, if it was worth waiting on the bridge or trying to get off, my mind told me it's just, you know, got to stay here.
What did you sit down at any point? Did you?
I sat down for a split second, and then I was up again. Started kind of pacing around, and you know, wondering what I could do. There wasn't a lot of, where I was on the bridge, there wasn't a lot of help that could be done besides what was already being done, so it wasn't, it was a really helpless feeling.
How many people were around you, people you could have gone up and talked to?
No more than 10.
And were they talking to one another?
There were some people frantically trying to use their phones and call people. Everyone was trying to, you know, asking people to use their phones, and it did seem like no one got through. I'm not sure if anyone did or not, but the cell phone towers were jammed, and so it was just, you know, people kind of in disbelief at what had just happened.
What's the next thing you recall then at that point?
At that point, towards my side of the bridge, there were probably a dozen officers and rescue workers looking for a way to get over.
How'd you get off?
A boat.
A boat came?
Yep. It started with one boat, and from when the first boat got, we got all the critically injured people off first, so there must have been, you know, anywhere from 3 to 4 people on stretchers, on boards. People on the bridge were working with the rescue workers. I know there was, I believe it was a sheriff that was running around, and the nurse was helping, and there were some rescue workers from the boat that got off and were very animate about asking who was okay, who needed immediate assistance, and so, you know, the first boat came, took a load, came back, another boat came, so that, you know, gradually there became more and more boats coming.
Were you feeling any sense of, boy, I'd really like to be on that boat, but I gotta wait?
Yeah. I had to keep telling myself that in the back of my mind, you're scared that the bridge is gonna sink and everything's gonna go under. I just had to tell myself, you know, there's people much, much worse off than I am right now.
And now the conclusion of my interview with 23-year-old Eric Helgeson, who was on the middle of the 35W bridge when it went down.
Once I got on dry land, I just sat down, and I don't even know what was going through my head at that point. There was a couple of guys I asked to use their cell phone. They're more than willing to give it to me, and I tried to make a call, let my parents know I'm okay, but that just couldn't get through. From that point, went up by the service road that it's right by the University of Minnesota, and they had a triage area set up there. I talked to 2 officers. Told them I was on the bridge, and they asked me if I was okay, and I said, yeah, I'm okay. They gave me water and let me use their phones, and still couldn't get out. And then I just sat down on the road and didn't try to think of what to do next. I just, at that point, what I did next wasn't really that important.
So at what point does shock start to wear off?
For me, it didn't wear off until maybe a full day after. The day after, I was, you know, I didn't really sleep much the night before, so I was still out of it. A combination of shock and lack of sleep. But then the morning after that, I woke up crying and just, you know, the questions of why did I live and stuff like that start to creep into your head, and you just relive the experience and the horror of the whole thing, and it's just you're thankful to be alive, and you're unthankful to be alive. It's like, you know, from utter gratitude and thankfulness to just absolute sadness and devastation. And it's
And what is the part that's not grateful to be alive?
It's almost like, why did I deserve to live and not, you know, the other people that didn't live? Why was I one that survived and others didn't? You know, why am I virtually unscathed and someone else is paralyzed? You know, it's something that comes in your head, and I gotta every day just kind of talk myself out of it and, you know, keep on working at it. It's just an emotional roller coaster. You break down and just kind of, I don't know if they were tears of joy, tears of fear, tears of sadness, maybe all of them.
It just comes every now and then.
Just the emotions just overcome you. So.
Do you try not to read about it, watch TV, or just the opposite?
Well, I was urged that it's probably not a good idea to watch. But I couldn't help it. I was glued to the TV, wanting to hear what had happened to people around me, what had happened to, you know, the people on the bus.
And do you flash on the images from it a lot?
Yeah.
When you do flash on the images, is it the collapsing that comes in strongest, or the after, or a person you dealt with that comes in strongest? What?
All of them.
All of them.
Yeah. It's you know, the thing that keeps me going is just the rescue workers, the Doug, the guy that walked me to the hospital, the people on the bridge with me, the stories of people helping other people, and just, you know, it's hard to say there was goodness out of this, but there truly was. I mean, it's people helping people just for the sake of it, you know. It wasn't so those thoughts are things I try to dwell on over the actual trauma of it,
right,
but it's and the people at the hospital, you know, it's something to see good people doing good things really makes you feel good about something like that, if that's possible. At least it helps me anyway to kind of not think about the bad.
Did you have any concern about coming today just to look at the bridge?
A little bit, but not really. I mean, everyone's... It's interesting to me to... You know, everyone wants to hear my story and wants to talk to me about it and see what I'm feeling. But for me, it's different because I'm an insider looking out. I'm interested to see how people that weren't involved are reacting, see how they feel about it, you know, what they're going through. And I think maybe some people seeing the bridge up close, it might be in some senses a little more traumatic for them than for me, because, you know, the images that are ingrained in me are the ones from the bridge. So for me to actually see it as far anyway right now is not necessarily any more traumatic than what I have in my memory banks. So, you know, it's not too difficult for me.
Can you tell me what it was like to go across your first bridge afterwards?
It's something that I need to talk myself. It's something that I need to... almost psych myself up for. The collapse, the actual collapse when I went down, is just a memory that I need to make sure doesn't resurface when I'm going over a bridge, because the times that it has, I've clenched the steering wheel and sped up and just had this fear come over me like I don't ever want to have. So it's you know, it's just a mindset, and it's something I need to get over. I can't go my whole life, you know, having a fear of going over every bridge because there's thousands of them, you know, they're unavoidable.
Well, is it helpful to talk about it? Not helpful? Neither? Is it a drag to talk about? Is it?
It is. It's been helpful to talk about, tell the story. You know, everyone's, all my friends and family and loved ones are, you know, oh, I'm sure you've heard, told the story 50 times, you know, you don't want to tell me again. It's like, well, in the same sense, I know that you don't know anyone else that was on the bridge, and you're probably really, really interested to hear how it went. And anytime I can, you know, tell the great acts that people were doing and tell their stories and things they did that were incredible. Because, you know, I've heard stories on the news and all these great stories of people, and I never heard, you know, the stories of the people that I was around. So for me to be able to, you know, tell how great they were is to as many people as possible, is, you know, it helps me, because it helps me remember the good that came out of it, just the people around me that were, you know, all there, and all the way up to, you know, the gentleman who walked me to the hospital, Doug, to the nurse who stayed with me all the way, Kate. You know, it's just, these people were, you know, in the face of adversity, they just stepped up, and all, you know, the rescue workers on the boats, the rescue workers that didn't hesitate for 1 second to jump into the water with, you know, fast-moving current and debris all over the place.
Do you have any kind of a spiritual sense associated with any of this, or no?
I didn't before this happened. Just yesterday, actually, I went to church with my brother, and we went to his church, and the service was primarily based around the bridge collapse, and you know, I don't want to sound like I'm pushing a higher power on anyone, or that I'm pushing religion on anyone. I'm not, by any means. Just in my own experience, it's something I might not even be able to explain to anyone else, you know. But in my own experience, I've certainly been, feel like I've been blessed, you know, that I was, you know, spared for some reason. I don't know why, but just that, you know, that I'm here is an absolute miracle. I have a more comforting feeling that I'm not alone, that, you know, someone's watching over us, you know, you know, I don't have that empty void anymore, that you know, I don't necessarily fear death now.
Mishki, AM 1500, KSTP.
And I'm going to guess, Jeff Peterson?
Oh, that's funny. That's funny, sorry. Tommy.
Well, we've had a lot of different news guys of late, Johnny.
Really?
A lot of different news people. Yeah, you haven't been around much this summer. I haven't seen you much.
Well, July. I had some time off in July.
A lot of time off.
Not a lot.
I don't know what sort of vacation package they're giving you. I noticed they're promoting you guys now. I noticed we can tune in and hear, what do they call you, the info something? What are you?
The informers?
The informers.
The informers.
You know, play on Transformers.
Sure, that's good stuff. So you're the informers.
I didn't write it, leave me alone.
Uh-huh. And that's in case people don't want to listen to the actual shows. We're selling you guys.
Okay.
All right. So you know, I better get out of the way and let an informer.
Before you do,
I'd like to see your ratings, mister.
Just a minute. I want to take a shot at you, too, now.
Okay? Thanks.
Since you changed subjects before when you talk about me being gone, there was a time earlier this year when people asked me if you still worked here. So
wouldn't have been March, would it?
Well, it was, actually, during spring training.
We're going to win, Twins.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wonder if that'll be the case next year. I'm going to make an argument next year that – in a 162-game season, I don't think you need another month's worth of preseason games. But that's me.
I'm going to guess you're going to lose that argument.
All right.
I'm just guessing. It's cloudy at 77 degrees. Almost a week after the Interstate 35W bridge collapsed in Minneapolis, the job of pulling tons of broken concrete cars and twisted metal from the Mississippi is moving ahead. Cleanup contractor moving cranes and barges into place today as divers continue the search for 8 people who are still missing. There are, of course, a lot of ways the bridge collapse could have been even worse. The Minneapolis Queen paddle boat was on a river tour at the time. The 48 tourists and 5 crew members had just gone into the lower St. Anthony Lock when the bridge collapsed right in front of them. Charlie Leakley, captain of the Minneapolis Queen, said he sat in amazement as he saw vehicles falling off the bridge.
Very rapidly, in a waterfall of dust and debris, a couple of cars went over the edge that couldn't stop in time.
Leakley offered to help with rescue efforts, but emergency officials declined the offer, fearing the boat could create even more problems and jeopardize the safety of its passengers. President Bush not saying if he would consult with Pakistan before ordering U.S. troops to take out al-Qaeda leaders. In a Camp David news conference, the president did say that with the right intelligence, the U.S. and Pakistani governments can take those al-Qaeda leaders out. Hollywood appearing to be making a bit of a comeback. Matt Damon's new spy flick, The Bourne Ultimatum, took in more than $70 million this weekend. That's the best ever for the month and the best in the Bourne series. This weekend's top 12 films earned a whopping 36% more than the same weekend last year. 5 Eyewitness News weather forecast. If the sun comes out full throttle, could get up to 86 before we're done. Then partly cloudy, slight chance of thunderstorms, 71 overnight. Tomorrow, partly sunny, isolated thunderstorms possible. Hot again, high of 90. Right now, it's cloudy, 77 degrees at AM 1500.
AM 1500, KSTP.
AM 1500 KSTP, this is the Mishki Broadcast. I want to thank Eric Helgeson for spending some time with me yesterday at Gold Medal Park talking about his experiences from August 1st. I marvel at the way he tells the story. He's a very thoughtful, low-key guy, at least in the time we were together, that's how he comes across. Very candid, very open about what he struggles with, the fact that he deals with a lot of guilt about being alive. He was the car directly behind Sherry Ingebrigtsen, the 60-year-old mother from Shoreview who died that day. He says the thing that he tries to continue to go back to is all the good that happened that day, and that's when he feels his best. The worst is when he just all of a sudden has the waves of emotion come over him, and he can't parcel out where all that's coming from, how much of it is gratitude, how much of it is fear, how much of it is sadness. He doesn't know. I rode in a car with him, and he asked me before even closing the door if we were going to be going over any bridges. It's important ahead of time when he gets in a car to know if that's going to be happening. if he's in a car by himself and he knows it's going to be happening, he tries to get on his cell phone and talk to someone during the trip across the bridge. That makes it a lot easier. If he isn't planning for the bridge and he finds himself on a bridge and realizes it suddenly, then he has the flashback, the feeling of the 35W bridge going down, and his instant reaction then, which was to floor it, grab the steering wheel and floor it. That's what he did when the bridge began to fall, just for a second, before realizing pretty quickly that wasn't going to help him out. That was just instinct. And then the foot pushed against the brake, the arms extended straight, holding the steering wheel, back up, head against the headrest, ready for the landing. So if he's on a bridge and he doesn't plan for it, then he goes into that mode. And he says, A, it's no fun to have that terror, and B, that is not a safe way to cross a bridge. Not for yourself, not for the other drivers. I was very surprised to learn that prior to this bridge collapse, bridge phobia was in the top 10 in terms of number of Americans with powerful fears, phobias, fears that went beyond the rational, paralyzing fears. I would not have thought a fear of a bridge collapse was in the top 10. It's higher on the list than the fear of public speaking. Now, if you went down the line with strangers and asked how many of you would be fearful of standing up in front of a large group of people at a microphone, at a podium, and talking to them, giving a talk, I would think almost the majority would be afraid of that. The bridge phobia in this country was higher prior to this collapse. What is it like now? This is Mishki, AM 1500 KSTP, and I'll be back.
Now, back to Mishki on AM 1500 KSTP.
I mentioned Sherry Ingebrigtsen, the 60-year-old Shoreview wife and mother who was in the car just ahead of Eric Helgeson when the bridge went down. I want to mention all the dead and missing. Julia Blackhawk, 32. Paul Ekstad, 51. Patrick Holmes, 36. Artemio Trinidad Mena, 29. And the missing Richard Schitt, 21. Peter Hausman, 47. Greg Jolstad, 45. Vera Peck, 50. Christina Sikorafis, 45. Sadia Sahal, 23. And her 20-month-old Hannah. And Scott Sathers, 30. One thing a lot of people who are on that bridge and survived can expect to deal with is post-traumatic stress symptoms. I'm going to have a doctor on in the next hour to talk about that. He's going to be in town this week giving a seminar. And you may want to pass along to people who were involved in this disaster that this seminar is occurring this week. Could be very helpful to them. Could be very helpful to almost anybody listening who is interested at all in the brain and how it works. That's in the next hour when I speak with Dr. Binyamin Rothstein. KSTP, good old St. Paul, big time, Minneapolis, coming up on 1 o'clock.